2.
It doesn't matter a bit to me, Barbara Mahler said. I'm just a company minion. I might as well stay here another week.
It might even be over a week. It might be 2 weeks. We don't know when they're coming.
So it's 2 weeks. 3 even. I've been here 2 years. I don't even remember what the United States looks like.
Vern could not tell if she were being sarcastic. The girl was standing at the window, looking out at the machinery beyond. In the darkening fog of early evening, the machinery looked like columns and pillars of ancient buildings that had been ruined by some natural catastrophe, so that nothing remained but these massive and useless supports. They were sprawled hither and yon, some one way, some another. Meaningless, sightless constructions, from which everything valuable had already been removed and packed up in crates, stored away somewhere. Dimly, the figures of 2 workmen appeared and passed by the window, carrying some metal sections between them. They struggled silently and disappeared into the darkness. Barbara turned away.
What season is it?
Where?
In the United States. What time of year?
I don't know. Fall? Summer? No, it's summer here. What does it matter? Is it important?
I suppose not. Did you know there are people in the United States who voluntarily live in San Francisco?
Why not?
The fog.
She gestured toward the window. Vern nodded. It bothers you? I'm surprised. You wouldn't be happier if it went away.
I wouldn't.
I doubt it. You know what it looks like around here, behind the fog? A city dump. Or someone's old backyard. This is the backyard of the world. There's junk stacked up here going back, I don't know. Company's been around a long time. He reached up and clicked on the overhead light. The office filled with a pale yellow glow.
It's leaving now.
It's leaving here, but it's arriving someplace else.
Really?
You're a funny person. It's hard to tell what's going on in your mind. Maybe you're not thinking at all. At least, not like I conceive it. Women are like that.
Oh, yes.
Barbara walked away from the window.
I tell you what's on my mind. It's not our staying that bothers me.
What then?
It's their going. All of them pulling out.
What else can they do?
They could put up some kind of a fight.
450 million people are a lot to have to fight. Anyhow, let's face it, this whole region is Chinese. It doesn't belong to us. We have no legal claim to it. They voided all contracts of this kind all over China. As soon as the revolution was over, our goose was cooked. Everybody knew they'd throw out all the foreign business firms, except maybe the Russians. Our days have been numbered since the fall of Shanghai. A lot of other companies are doing just what we're doing.
I suppose.
We're lucky. We're far enough south to get across the mountains into India. That means we'll at least get out. Some of them in the north haven't been so lucky.
Vern waved at the calendar on the wall.
1949 is going to go down on the books as a bad year for business, at least in this part of the world.
People in Washington could do something.
Maybe. I doubt it. It's the times. Trends in the great ebb and flow of history. Asia's no place for Western business firms to be hanging around. Anybody with half an eye could see this coming years ago. This stuff was brewing in 1900.
What happened then?
The Boxer Rebellion? Same as this. The start. We won that, but it's been only a question of time. Let the yucks take over. The company will have to chalk it up to profit and loss, whether it wants to or not.
Anyhow, we'll be going back home.
It'll be good to be out of here. You can feel it in the air. The tension? It'll be good to get out of it. We're too damn tired to keep this sort of thing going for long. It's too much of a drain. We're personae non gratae, guests at the wrong party, somebody else's party. We're not wanted. Can't you feel them all looking at us? We're in the wrong place.
Is that how you feel?
That's how we all feel out here. We're worn out. Our professional smile is beginning to wear a little thin. It's time we started edging toward the door.
I don't like to get pushed.
It's our own fault. We're being pushed because we stayed too long. We should have left 50 years ago.
Barbara nodded absently.
She was not listening to what Vern was saying. She was wandering around the office.
You know, it looks terrible without the curtains.
The curtains?
They're gone. They took them down. Didn't you notice?
The office was shabby and bleak. The plaster walls were stained and scarred. I never noticed. Vern grinned. Don't you remember? I never noticed things like that. Barbara turned her back to him and gazed out the window again. Outside, as the fog settled down from above, the great columns dissolved and grew even more vague and indistinct in the gloom. Don't you want to talk? Vern said. She did not answer. The last two cars are leaving about now. Want to go down and say goodbye to the lucky ones? Barbara shook her head.
No. I'm going over to the women's dorm and start getting my room back in shape. They just now told me I was staying.
They picked our names at random, Vern said. Just luck, or divine intervention. We stay, they go. Isn't it nice, you and I together? And one other person. Wonder who. Probably some lumphead. Barbara went outside, down the porch steps. Barbara walked slowly up the path to the dormitory building and stopped. A small group of workmen were putting a chain on the front door with a large padlock.
Hold on,
she said.
You can put your lock someplace else. This is an exception.
We were only supposed to leave the office building and part of one of the men's dorms open,
a workman said.
Well, I'm not staying in the men's dorm. I'm staying here.
We were told.
I don't care what you were told. This is my place. I'm staying here.
The workmen considered, grouping together.
Okay,
the foreman said. They took the lock and chain back off again.
How's that?
What about the windows? Are you going to take the boards off?
The workmen gathered their tools up.
Maybe one of your men can do it. We have a schedule. We have to get out of here this evening.
I thought you were going to work through tomorrow.
The men laughed.
Are you kidding? There are yucks all around. We don't want to be here when they move in.
You don't like them?
They smell like sheep.
That's what they say about us. Oh, the hell with it. Go on, take off.
The workman disappeared down the path.
Yucks couldn't be any worse.
Barbara went up the steps, inside the great stark building. Once it had been clean and white. Now it was gray. Water had dripped down from the roof and formed long brown stains on the walls. The window frames were rusty under the newly nailed boards.
That is what I have in place of a home. The goddamn dirty old place.
She looked around, feeling for the light switch in the darkness. Her fingers touched it and she flicked it down. The hall lights came on. Barbara shook her head. The walls were covered with splotches of old Scotch tape from endless posters and notices. One notice alone remained. No smoking without authorized permit. Says you, had been penciled underneath. Barbara went on up to the second floor. The doors leading off the hall were locked. She came to her own door, getting her key from her purse. She unlocked the door and went inside the room, crossing to the lamp. The lamp came on. The room was empty and dismal.
My poor little room,
Barbara said. Nothing remained but the iron bed, company property, and the wood end table with its lamp. The painted floor showed an outline where the rug had been. Not so much as a single spot of color had been left. Barbara sat down on the bed. The springs creaked under her weight. She took a cigarette from her purse and lit it. For a time, she sat smoking. But the barren room was too depressing. She got to her feet and walked restlessly back and forth.
Christ.
At last she went back downstairs. She passed out into the darkness, down the steps, onto the path. By lighting matches, she managed to find her way to the place where the baggage had been collected and stacked by the side of the road. Most of it was gone. The great mound had shrunk to a tiny stack. A few wood crates and three suitcases. She found her own suitcase and pulled it away from the others. It was damp with mildew and heavy. She carried it back along the path, all the way to the women's dorm.
On the porch, she stopped to catch her breath, resting the suitcase beside her. How dark the night was. Pitch black. Nothing stirred. They had all left, even the workmen. Cleared out as fast as they could. Everything was deserted, without sign of life. It did not seem possible. The company had always been alive with activity, all night long. The furnaces, the glowing slag, men working, trucks moving around, gouges and scoops. But not now. There was only silence. Darkness and silence. Far up above her, a few stars shone, faint and remote through the fog. A wind blew, moving among the trees by the side of the building. She picked up her suitcase and carried it inside, into the gloomy hall, up the stairs to her own room. There, she lit another cigarette and sat down on the bed. Presently, she unsnapped the suitcase. She took her clothing out, a robe, slippers, pajamas. Then her cold cream, deodorant, cologne, bottles and tubes, nail polish, soap, her toothbrush. She laid them in a row on the table by the bed. At the bottom of the suitcase, she found her Silex coffee maker and a little brown paper package of coffee, tied with a rubber band, and some sugar and paper cups. It was a damn good thing she had thought to pack the coffee and things in the suitcase instead of letting the workmen crate them up. She plugged in the Silex and went down the hall to the bathroom to get water. She put the water and coffee into the Silex. Then she changed, removing her clothing. She put on the bathrobe and slippers. She found a towel. A good warm bath, and then to bed. That would help. Tomorrow things would seem brighter. At night, with all her things crated up, the world silent and deserted around her, no wonder she felt depressed. Had she ever felt worse? The stained, bare walls reflected the stark light of the lamp bulb. No pictures, no rug. Just the iron bed, the dirty table, the long row of bottles and jars and tubes. And her underwear, lying at the end of the bed. God. The coffee rushed up into the tub. It would soon be ready. She unplugged it. What a way to live. Would it be like this for a whole week? 2 weeks? She poured a cup of coffee, adding a little sugar. 2 weeks, perhaps. And with Vern. Of all the people in the world, it was a plot. Fate, as people used to call it. Fate. She sipped the hot coffee, sitting on the bed in her bathrobe. What a hell of a situation. How was she going to stand it? Why did it have to be him, of all the people they might have picked? It didn't seem possible. She looked around at the room. Could things be worse? The room was cold, barren. The cold was seeping around her, past the wool of the robe, chilling her. But the coffee made her feel a little better. Presently, she began to feel sleepy. Her head ached dully. Her eyes were dry, tired. She put the cup down on the floor and lay back, her head resting against the plaster wall. The springs groaned protestingly under her. She loosened her robe. She was tired. Tired and miserable. A week or two, living like this, and with him around. She closed her eyes. Her thoughts began to wander. She relaxed, her head sinking down. The pressure of the wall against her neck faded. The scratchy feel of the robe next to her skin began to recede. She thought back to other times, other places. Presently, her cigarette ceased to glow. She had stubbed it out. Her cup of coffee grew cold. Lying on the little iron bed, she thought back, her mind wandering. The barren room around her dissolved and grew dim. The heap of underwear, the bottles and jars, the bleak walls, everything wavered. She relaxed into her memories. It was Castle, she remembered. They had gone into the bars barefoot, in dirty pants and shirts. The bars had wood chairs and there were wood mugs on the tables. With no shoes, they could feel sand on the floor under their feet. Most of the bars served fish dinners. Those bars had a fish smell about them. Nobody seemed to mind if they were all sloppy and dirty, laughing and holding on to each other. She, Penny, and Felix.
When it was warm enough in the evening, they swam in the ocean without any clothes on. Sometimes they swam almost all night and lay in bed the next day, too lazy to get up. Felix and Penny were engaged. It had been decided that after their vacation, before school started in the fall, the two of them would get married. They would live in Boston, of course. Felix would go on with his postgraduate work in engineering, and Penny would continue to work at the library, at least until he got his degree. Felix was tall and blonde, with a small mustache. His eyes were always bright and button-shiny, and he looked down at people, his hands in his pockets or wrapped around a load of books. His skin was sunny and healthy. He was very good-natured. Barbara liked him, but he got on her nerves. He tripped on things. He swung his arms when he talked. She found it hard to take him seriously. Penny, plump and wearing a heavy canvas shirt, smoking a cigarette, was warm and attractive. She laughed with a hearty man-style deep bellow. She never wore lipstick, and when they came to Castle, she brought only two pairs of shoes, both low-heeled, and men's pants. As for Barbara Mailer, at 20, she found herself facing a world that was quite different from anything she had known in Boston. She faced it with a mixture of shyness and sullen reserve. When they were with people, she sat off in a corner, holding a drink, impressing people as aloof and untouchable. If a man approached her, she cut him down with a few well-chosen words. Actually, she was frightened. She was especially frightened of the very men she sent off. Yet at the same time, she wanted very much to talk to them. At 20, her hair was cut in a tight bob, even all the way around. It was brown and thick, with heavy, wide strands, like the Botticelli cherubs that one sees. Her nose was large and Roman, giving her face a strong hardness, but with a kind of young boy youthfulness, a combination of female austerity and masculine immaturity. To many, she seemed more like an immature boy than a woman. She was slender, then, with nice arms and legs. She wore a brass bracelet on her wrist, her only jewelry. Sitting in the corner, watching the group of people talking and laughing made her feel alone. She did not like to mix with them, and if she were forced to, she spoke roughly and slowly, a few words at a time. Many years later, she realized they all thought she was tough and hard. The men who tried to pick her up never repeated it. She wrote to her family every week, especially to her younger brother, her favorite. Bobby was 17. He had dropped out of school to marry a silly, selfish girl who had been working as a secretary and who had quit her job the same week that they were married. He had never returned to school, to the family's bitter dismay. Of all of them, Barbara was perhaps the only one who still wrote kindly and personally to the boy. And he appreciated the warm letters from his older sister. Castle was a resort town up the coast from Boston. It was very small, and only a few people went there. But it had a lovely bay. In the wintertime, fishermen and shopkeepers lived in Castle, and perhaps one or two professional men who looked after them. But when spring came and the snow melted, the tourists began to appear. Soon the real inhabitants were lost in a crowd of young people up from Boston. They rented cabins on the beach. They pitched tents, stayed in cars and in trailers, or in sleeping bags. As the summer came on, new faces appeared among them. Old faces vanished. Finally, it was fall, and they were gone. Now, in July, Penny and Felix and Barbara lay in the warm sand, smoking and talking, enjoying the fish smells, the archaic streets and houses, the old wood that had been washed up from the sea around them. Ocean and wind, the smell of fish and salt and ancient timbers. But the last days of their vacation were on them. They would soon be going back to Boston. Penny and Felix would be married. A new life was starting for them. But what of Barbara? They had two cabins next to each other. In the first one were Penny and Barbara. Felix had the other. After the first few nights, Barbara woke up to find Penny gone. She was alone in the bed. The covers were tossed back on Penny's side. She was not in the bathroom. She had gone out. Barbara lay in the bed, fully awake, thinking and looking out through the part of the window visible past the shade. There were stars out, bigger than the stars she saw from her Boston window, upstairs in the family home. It was a warm night. Silence lay all around her. She felt strange, lying alone in the big bed, in the unfamiliar cabin. As if she were in a train, lost someplace in the world, moving through the night without any idea of direction, past vacant fields, houses bolted up, stores closed for the night, signs turned off. Deserted streets and silence everywhere, without life or movement. She thought about Penny. When would she be back? Of course, she was with Felix. Penny was 23, and they had been engaged for a long time. A vague unhappiness settled over Barbara. She pushed the covers from her and lay naked, thinking about Penny and Felix. The darkness was warm against her bare skin. Finally, she turned over and went to sleep. In the later nights, when Penny was gone so often, Barbara had plenty of time to think about herself and what direction she was moving in. She was young, younger than any of the other people she had gone around with in Boston. Here, in Castle, they knew no one very well. Without Penny and Felix, she was all alone. She was dependent on them. Her crowd was not here. They were jazz enthusiasts, all of them. Not the jazz of the ballroom radio shows, the popular dance bands for high school proms. Their jazz was the real jazz, the jazz of the South, of New Orleans, the riverboats, the jazz that had moved up the river to Chicago. In Chicago, it had become real music. In the hands of great musicians, it had become an art. Listening to the cornet of Beidebeck, dead now, the rasp of Louis Armstrong, they found a raw, brutal, and sophisticated music that seemed to move as they were moving. If the music were blind and lost, so were they also. They clung to this music in the small places where it was played and heard, the cafes, the dim little Negro bars. There were records, the names, the sacred names, Bix, Tram, the hard, rough voice of Ma Rainey, places and names, sounds. This was Barbara's crowd, but they were not here in Castle. They were back in Boston. Here she was, with a new group, which she did not understand. She felt no desire, when she watched them talking, to join in with them. A kind of heavy stupor settled over her. She moved away, to the back of the room, sitting quietly alone. By herself she watched, a spectator, perched on the arm of a chair, or leaning against a door. She seemed to be ready to leave at any moment, disdainfully, haughtily. In reality, she struggled with the rising tide of terror and the desire to fell in disorderly panic. Lying in the darkness alone, night after night, looking past the shade at the great stars, she thought about herself. She thought, what will I be in a year? Will I be alive? Will I be in Boston? Will I be living this way? The prospect of living as she was now filled her with a cold despair. If she had to spend her life alone, sitting at the edge of rooms, watching the others, then it did not matter what happened to her. She might as well give herself to anything that came along, any cross tide that might tear her loose and carry her off. She thought again of Penny and Felix lying in bed together. She imagined the sweating, panting exhaustion of love, the periods of quiet, the blood. Restlessly, she kicked the covers back. She got out of bed and sat looking into the darkness. At 20, her mind and body were a battleground for some internal fever that was working itself slowly to the surface. The symptoms were long in coming. The waves of intense longing and desire were still indistinct and wave-like, rolling around inside her like a heavy fluid. She got up from the chair and paced back and forth. After a while, Penny came inside quietly. She saw Barbara and stopped at the door.
Hello, honey. I was out walking along the beach. I know, Barbara said. How was it? Fine.
Barbara got back into bed.
Coming?
Penny came over and slid in beside her. Barbara felt her body, heavy and solid, almost like a man's body. She gasped, suddenly, tense. But Penny was already asleep. Barbara lay back, staring up at the darkness, her mouth open a little, her hands clenched at her sides. The next day was the beginning of their last day at Castle, Because they did not have as much money as when they had come, it was decided they would try to hitchhike back.
Lots of people are driving down the coast right now, Felix said. An endless stream of shiny cars.
Barbara pointed out that it might mean they would have to separate. No car would want to pick up three people. Even two was a lot. The best would be to go singly, but of course that would be no fun. They let the matter ride for a while. More urgently, there was a final party for them which some friends who were remaining were giving. Penny and Felix went to the party together. Barbara was to come along after them, since she wanted to write home once more before leaving. She wrote to her mother and to her father, and she wrote a short note to Bobby.
Bobby, sometimes I envy you, being married. I hope you and Judy are happy. Maybe I'll get a chance to come and visit you later in the fall.
She looked at what she had written, and then taking a new sheet of paper, wrote,
Maybe I'll have a chance to come visit you two and see how married life is. Must have some advantages.
She wrote some more, and then sealed the note in an envelope and put postage stamps on the three letters. After a time, she went to the closet and began to bring out clothes she wanted to wear to the party. She put out a dark green skirt on the bed and a light neutral blouse. She dressed carefully, heels and nylons. She combed her hair down into place and fastened it back with a silver clasp. Over the skirt and blouse, she slipped on a suede leather jacket. Putting the letters in the jacket pocket, she went out into the warm night, locking the door. At the party, sitting on the arm of a big couch, watching the people talking and laughing, she realized she would really be sorry to leave Castle. To her, Boston, with stale air, familiar streets and hills, the same old faces, the high school, the movie theaters, would be the same old life again. Exactly as before. She would have to go back and take things up just as before, without change. Except that now she would be more alone than ever. Penny and Felix would be married and off by themselves. She shut her eyes. The murmur of the room rolled around her. How could she face it? While she was thinking about it, a man came over to her. He was a small man, older than most of them, with a pipe and a gray rumpled suit.
You're not drinking? Can I bring you anything? Scotch and water?
He had a glass in his hand. Barbara shook her head.
No, thanks.
Nothing?
No.
You wouldn't mind holding my drink for a second, would you?
He held his glass out to her, and she took it slowly. The man went off, and in a moment he came back with another glass. He grinned, his eyes dancing behind horn-rimmed glasses. She thought,
What an odd little face. So thin and wrinkled, like a little prune.
I'll keep this one, he said. It's fuller.
She started to get angry, but then she laughed because he was grinning at her, watching her.
All right, she said. Give me the drink.
They exchanged drinks. Barbara sipped a little. The liquor was cold and biting. She wrinkled her nose. The man had not gone away. He was still standing beside her at the end of the couch.
My name's Vern Tilden, the man said.